Hi, this is Dave Feller.
Hi, this is the NQS Methods Panel team. We'll be getting started in just a minute.
Okay.
Hello, this is Karen from NQS. We will be getting started in just a couple minutes.
Thanks, Karen.
Hello.
Hi, this is NQF. We'll be getting started in just a minute.
Okay.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Karen Johnson with N2S. Thank you for joining our December Scientific Methods Panel call. We appreciate your time, and I think given the emails that have gone back and forth between several of our panel members, I think we're going to have some interesting conversation today. Just a couple of reminders. We are doing today as a two-hour call instead of a one-hour call, because we felt that back in the day when we were trying to do our one-hour calls, we just didn't have enough time to really get deep into the weeds of the questions that we were trying to answer. So I think today's call, having more time, we will should be able to have plenty of time to talk about at least one of the things that we want to talk about. Usually we have a few housekeeping items that we go through, so I'll just tell you the ones that I can think of right now, which is, first of all, if you are not speaking, if you would make sure your phone is on mute just to keep the background noise in check. Also, we know each other pretty well now, but it still helps if you could just say your name before you start talking, and I'll try to do that too on my end as well. So I know several people have contacted us to let us know that unfortunately they couldn't make the call today, but we will go ahead and do our roll call. I think we will have a good number of people on. So, Hannah, if you don't mind forwarding us to our list of members, let me just go through the list, and if you're here, just say you're here. Matt Austin. Bijan Bora.
I'm here.
Thanks, Bijan. John Bott.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, John. Dave Sella.
I'm here, and remember, when you say you're here to unmute, be sure your phone's unmuted.
Perfect. Thanks. Daniel, I know, said that he couldn't come, and actually so did Matt. So I know Matt and Daniel aren't going to be able to join us. Lacey Fabian. Okay. Mary Beth Farquhar. Jeff Shepard.
Here.
Hey, Jeff. Larry Glantz. Okay, not hearing Larry yet. Joe Hunter. Sherry Kaplan.
I'm here, but I have a hard stop at 12 o'clock.
Okay. We'll talk back, Sherry. Thank you. Joe Kunish.
Come on.
Hey, Joe.
Hey.
Paul Kalansky. Vinky Lynn. Vicky.
Yeah.
Thanks. Jeff Needleman. Dave Nairn.
Here.
Dean Nuccio.
Here.
Sean O'Brien.
Here.
Thank you. Jim Perloff.
Here.
Patrick Romano. Actually, Patrick is on vacation, so he's been sending emails, but he is not able to join us today. Sam Simon also is unable to join. Alex. Scott Hill.
I'm here.
Hey, Alex. Mike Soto. Christy Tigland. Actually, I think Christy also told me she couldn't come. Ron Walter.
I'm here.
Hey, Ron.
Hi.
Terry Warholic.
Hi, I'm here.
Hey, Terry. Eric Weinhandel.
I am here.
Hi, David. And
hi.
Susan White.
I'm here also.
Thanks, Susan. Did I miss anybody, or did anybody not get an acknowledgement from me?
This is Paul Jelansky. I just joined.
Oh, hey, Paul. Thank you. Anybody else?
Jack Newman. I just joined.
Oh, great. Hi, Jack. And anyone else? Okay, great. Let's go on. And so what we have on the agenda for today's discussion is really to continue the conversation that we started in October at our in-person meeting to kind of walk through some of the potential options that we might have for updating our evaluation criteria. So, and I'll walk through and remind you kind of where we landed the last time and tee up the conversation for going forward.
Karen, can you hear me?
Yes. Is that Larry?
Yeah, this is Larry. For some reason, I was having a problem with my phone. Thanks.
Okay. Yep, I can hear you now. Perfect. Thank you. All right. Let me check you off. Okay. Here we go, Larry. Okay. Now, the slide deck that I sent you, there's a lot of interesting stuff on that slide deck. We may not get to all of it. And if you don't, that's okay. We will get to it eventually. So we want to just take the time that we need to walk our way through the criteria discussion and then go on to some other of the questions that we have. If we do have time, we do want to have kind of a conceptual discussion about just endorsement of healthcare performance measures in general, so thinking about quality measures, measures of access, measures of cost and resource use, and even more specifically, population health-based measures. And it's something that we had thought we'd get to in our October discussion, and we didn't get to it. So we do want to have that discussion, and Dave Nerens will lead us through that that portion of the call. Again, if we don't get to that today, we will do that in our next call. When we can, our next item will be thinking about score-level validity testing and thinking specifically about what are the appropriate comparators. So we will talk about those just in general, and we'll probably talk about them maybe a little bit more specifically around cost measures. Again, I kind of doubt we'll get to that today, but if we do, then there's plenty there to keep us occupied, and I think it'll be an interesting discussion. So with that, what we'll do is, a couple other housekeeping things. Today's discussion, when we get to the methods issues on the recommendations, kind of like we did in October in our in-person, it was quite helpful to have the show of hands in terms of our voting. So we are going to most likely vote today on some questions, and probably not all of the ones that I sent out in the email a day or so ago. But we will have some voting, and that's really just to help me really get my head around kind of the level of consensus that we have on these ideas. So we will do that. And right before the call, literally like 1 minute before, I sent out a link that has the instructions as well as the link for doing that voting. So hopefully you guys all have that. It should be at the top of your email box at this point. If you don't have that, if you wouldn't mind just letting us know via the chat function, and Hannah will help us get that to you. Also, we have the chat function and the raise hand function, and Hannah is helping us monitor that as well. So feel free to use that to get in touch with us as we walk through. Or, as usual, just type up and we'll just have a conversation about these issues as we walk through. So with that, let's go ahead and get into our slide deck. And this slide here, and this is slide 6 if you're looking at this not through the webinar. This is just a current testing requirement, and this is just a reminder of how things stand right now. And as you can see here, we have some different requirements depending on whether or not, or depending really on the type of measure. So for kind of what I, you know, kind of shorthand call the regular structure process outcome measures, for reliability, we allow either data element level testing or score level testing. It doesn't have to be both. But for instrument-based measures, we do require both. For composites, we require score level reliability testing. And for EQQMs, it kind of depends on whether the data are stored in structured data fields or not. And so it could change. The shortcut that I have referenced in this table is one that I think in general everybody hates. Well, I shouldn't say everybody, because actually I think a few people are somewhat happy with the shortcut. And that is this idea that if data element validity testing is required, we don't require additional reliability testing. Now, I don't think people like that kind of across the board, but we have had some conversations in October and via email about, you know, the utility of asking for data element reliability if you already know something about data element validity. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. Also, in terms of validity, again, for regular structured process outcome measures, right now our requirements say that folks could provide either element level testing or score level testing, or at least for new measures, face validity. The idea of this face validity is that by the time of maintenance, there would be empirical testing of some sort required. Again, with instrument-based, we require both. For composite measures, it's basically the same as the structure process outcome when a measure is new, but by the time it comes around for maintenance, we are expecting score level validity testing. And then for ECQMs, we require data element validity testing. That's not to say we wouldn't like to see score level testing, but it's not a requirement at this point. So that's our current requirements. And our testing or our discussions in October, we talked about this, and we did try to talk about everything together, and that became a little iffy. So we tried to split things apart and talk about score level reliability testing. So where I think we had pretty strong agreement is that NQF should be requiring score level reliability testing. So that seemed like where the consensus was in our meeting. In terms of requiring, again, for these regular measures, structure process outcome measures, in terms of requiring data element reliability testing, I don't think we reached consensus in that discussion. And then around that shortcut, we have this idea of potentially a new shortcut, not saying that no reliability testing would be required if we had data element validity, but maybe it would, maybe that shortcut would change a little bit. So again, we have to talk about that. In terms of validity, requiring data element validity testing or requiring score level validity testing, we talked about it a little bit in October, but we didn't get any consensus. So, and we really didn't talk about instrument-based composite or ECQM in our last meeting. And today, I really don't want to talk about instrument-based composite or ECQM. I really want to focus on these other kinds of measures and work on those today. And maybe we'll work on and rethink some of the other ones later if we need to. So with that, we will actually ask about each of the four, for the regular structured process outcome measures. We're going to start by talking about validity, and we'll ask you if score level validity should be either required, accepted, but waived if there's adequate justification, or leave as optional. Basically, that's saying that you or business would still apply. So we'll ask that about validity, score level, validity data elements, and then we'll work our way backwards to reliability. Now, another thing, I think we did talk about the this idea of we'd like to expect it, but we'd be willing to waive it if there was adequate justification. I think there was a quite good consensus maybe on some of that, but again, we didn't have time to do the raise hands and get some counts. So we want to make sure that is aired today as well. The other thing I want to tell you before we really start getting into the discussion is what happens if you guys make some recommendations today? And hopefully we will. Hopefully we'll come to some kind of consensus. What will happen is that I and my team will actually take those and think about them and put that in kind of context with other things that we've done in the past and basically make a package to present to our CSAC, which is our governing body. It's the group that oversees the CDP process and oversees our endorsement criteria. So what the CSAC could do, depending on, you know, what you guys recommend, they could accept it, you know, as stated, they could reject it, or they could modify it in some ways. So that they can basically do what they want to do, but your recommendations are really advisory recommendations to the CSAC who would actually make the final call on these. Now, even if they accept recommendations that reflect pretty major changes, which they could very well do, they may want to suggest an implementation time frame. So what I mean by that is we may get consensus from you guys today to, for example, let's stick with what we landed on in October, to start requiring score-level reliability testing. That wouldn't get potentially approved by the CSAC until April, and then you know, we won't necessarily expect that measure developers would be able to do that testing in time to turn it around if they are kind of up for maintenance or bringing in the new measure very close to that time frame. So what would generally happen is we might decide that we would want to give maybe a one-year grace period, depending, again, on what the recommendations are. So we would know from CSAC in April if we are going to make changes, and then late spring, early summer, we would start publicizing those and then potentially adding in a grace period. So it could be as late as August of 2021 if major changes are done. So we might not actually implement those changes until next summer. So I just wanted to let you know what the time frame is on that. Now, with that, just a couple other little notes. I sent around an email a couple of days ago, and it was actually Dave Marins' request that is there any, and I think we need to talk about that first before we delve into the actual questions that we're going to vote on. We basically wanted to know mathematically, do we have any flavor that if we have one kind of testing, does that kind of imply or guarantee the adequacy of this other thing? So in other words, I think as we stated it, if we know that we have score level reliability, does that mean we also know mathematically that we would have data element reliability? And obviously, if something like that were the case, then we wouldn't have to require that as part of their criteria, which it just, you know, would be kind of deemed, if you will. So we asked that set of questions, and I tried to do both permutations, and I also had some questions in there that get to that kind of shortcut question. Okay, if we know about data elements, validity, does that, you know, tell us something, or do we know something kind of in turn about data element reliability, et cetera? So we had several emails back and forth that were starting to get to some of these things. And hopefully you were able to read them, and I think a few other people were going to respond via email. But with that, I think I'm going to stop, and I am going to hand it over, if you're comfortable, Dave Nairn, to go ahead and facilitate this this discussion by the panel. And we'll I'll roll this back to the slide, slide 8, which is, I think, where we should start. But we probably want to start the discussion about the math and go from there. Is that okay with you, Dave?
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. I'm just trying to think how to weave the math discussion in. I guess all I would do is ask people to have this on the top of their heads. Well, the questions here are phrased in the sense of should we require, but just keep in mind if there's one or more of these, I'll call them mathematical guarantee relationships, that would be a very strong argument for saying that we would not need to require something in the presence of something else. Now, I'm not sure that validity is going to be the best example of that, and this is where we start, but that's okay. And I'll just emphasize what Karen said, that if there are a set of absolutely basic mathematical relationships between one of our criteria and another, such that the presence of one absolutely mathematically guarantees the presence of another, that's the basis for saying, okay, if you have the former, then you don't need to tell us the latter because we know it's guaranteed. But let's see if any of those relationships actually exist. I was going to say when this slide came up first time, and I'm checking with Karen here, the word testing could be a little loaded here. I just want to clarify that when we use the word testing, we're not strictly meaning testing at the hands of the developer. A developer, for example, could bring forward data from existing published articles by other folks establishing validity or reliability. My sense, as we've behaved over the last couple of years, is that that is acceptable. So testing here means testing by somebody, not necessarily by the developer. Karen, that's your sense of the language as well?
That's absolutely the sense of it. And that actually also reminds me, too, that we're talking only about, especially in this first slide, we're only talking about what we at NQL call validity testing. So that doesn't mean, and as a matter of fact, we have the other parts of validity that get into risk adjustment, how missing data are handled, exclusions, all that kind of stuff. So all that stuff remains. It's still a vital component of whether or not something should be considered valid for the purposes of endorsement. So I'm talking in our conversation today is strictly about the validity testing, which often is some kind of a construct validation, known groups validation, you know, typically a correlation of some sort. Doesn't have to be, but that's usually what we see. So right. I just want to make sure that that's what we're talking about. We're not trying to negate any, demonstration of adequacy of risk adjustment, et cetera.
Got it. And also one last thing before we open it up. Just remind us, and I know this goes a slide or two back from this one, the current state here is an OR rule. Is that correct, that for these measures right now, the requirement is one or the other but not both?
That is the requirement for the regular structure process outcome measures.
Okay, so now back to slide 8. Basically, we're asking ourselves when we ask these two questions, do we wish to move from the current state? The current state is or, one or the other.
Yes.
All right. Happy to open it up for then discussion. Whoever would like to lead off.
This is Gene. Quick question about this. If it's a new measure, we're still accepting face validity?
That is the current state, yes.
Well, even in slide 7, which is the revised state, it has an or face validity for new elements.
Right.
New measures.
Right. So this is Karen. So we still do allow face validity for new measures. So if somebody brings in face validity, we don't, that just automatically, assuming that they did it in the way that we prescribe, which is it has to be systematic, and you have to have experts, it has to ask the right questions. So there are some rules around that. But if it's a new measure, then that would be sufficient to pass, if you will, the validity testing portion of it. Again, all of those other things about validity, risk adjustments, missing data, exclusions, all those other things have to be weighed in there as well. But once the measure comes back for maintenance, what we say is that at that point, we are expecting empirical testing, not only face validity. Now, we have a little loophole there, though, and we say if you absolutely cannot do it, then justify to us why you can't do it, and quite frankly, we'll see if we buy it. If we do, then we'll let it go through. The history there is about, 4 years ago, somewhere in that range, we did try to basically drop face validity for new or maintenance measures, just completely say we're not going to take it anymore. And we got an incredible amount of pushback from the developers in the field who thought that just, asking for empirical validation was just too much. So we ended up backing up to the expected at maintenance version of it. Now, perhaps, the time has come and we, do we try saying no again to face validity? I mean, I think we're willing to think about that. But, again, that just had such pushback from the field a few years ago that we couldn't push it through.
And Dave, again, I'd also note, just to try to informally summarize, that I was picking up some positive support for face validity in the email exchange we just had in the last 48 hours or so, on the assumption that it's actually a rigorous formal face validity process, not just asking a couple of your friends. Also would, just to clarify and also to check, face validity is set in the context of score-level validity. It's basically saying, This measure, according to the opinion of 15 big national experts, is a valid measure of quality of care of hospitals or doctors or health plans or whatever it is. It falls in the measure score category, not the data element category.
David, this is Gene again. That was my question. I mean, if we say that we want score level validity, if it's, we say it's required, then are we bumping out face validity, a developer who's offered face validity during the initial review, given that they may not have had time to collect sufficient data on the score in the real world?
And that's why I wanted to be cautious about the word testing here, because if, for example, our general view is that we should require some information about score level validity, a second branch of that recommendation would be whether face validity in a rigorous fashion would do the job. But establishing face validity doesn't quite meet my semantic test of the word testing. So the words are going to be a little slippery here, but at least for purposes of framing the discussion, one might say as a branch of the proposal that face validity, if you can establish it in a rigorous way, is a way of establishing score-level validity. And if we require score-level validity as a concept, face validity could be a way to get there. But we could say, yeah, we want score-level validity information, and face validity is not an acceptable way to get there. So there are a couple of branches on this one.
This is Sherry. I'm having trouble because I still think a lot depends on the stage of development of the measure. And you don't want to, you know, impair the development of new measures, especially in places that we don't have much information on quality of care, like pediatrics and some of their some areas and other specialties. I think if a measure is in the early stages of development, face validity is actually assessment of content validity. Did you get the content right? But then if you're going to push it for the next purpose of measurement, now we're going to start comparing different units of the healthcare system one to another. Using just, oh, yeah, we got the content right, isn't going to do the job. Well, does it accurately reflect the performance of, for example, individual physicians or you know, different purposes of measurement? So I know Karen's reluctant to have this get too complex, but I think we've phased into a different era of quality assessment now that CMS is up the stakes. And I think that, you know, if, for example, and we just had this discussion, establishing testing for one purpose or comparison of one unit doesn't guarantee the results for another purpose or unit of comparison. So
right.
We need to kind of bound this a little bit and maybe tear it up with respect to stage of development and purpose.
Yeah, this is Jack Needleman. Sherry, thank you. By the way, before I enter into the current discussion, which is terrific, I think we all need to acknowledge a real debt of gratitude for all the folks who contributed to that email conversation that preceded the meeting. It's an extraordinarily detailed, thoughtful, reflective, and interactive set of emails that have certainly help clarify my thinking about the contents of today's call. Getting back to where we are in the conversation, Sherry, I heard what you said, and I don't know if you intended sort of slipping into the issue of reliability. Does it allow you to make distinctions between units? When I think about the validity testing, the first question is simply, is it measuring what it claims to be measuring? There's an element at the data element level, is what's being measured what's claimed to be measured? The reliability issue is it being coded and recorded and collected out with reliability, but is the data element, if it was collected, reported, and amassed accurately, would it be measuring what we think it's measuring? And I do think data element validity is required. In some cases, it can be established by face validity. If you've got if the measure is of readmissions, and you've got a measure that says, we're counting a readmission within 30 days, and you believe 30 days is a reasonable window, then the measure is inherently valid because it's measuring what it says it's measuring. When we move to score-level validity, there are three kinds of ways in which something goes data element to a score. I think it's three. It may only be two. One of them is we're applying risk adjustment. And again, the same issue of are the elements in the risk adjustment accurate enough to use is a reliability question, but is the risk adjustment model correct for adjusting for the other reasons why we might see this outcome? That's a validity question. and it ties to the risk adjustment. The other place where we see score level, and you can only do that if you've got enough data to do it, but all of our risk adjustment models, including the first wave stuff, have included some empirical analysis of the risk adjustment models. So somebody's been able to get that data for those measures that are risk adjusted. The other kind of score level validity we've seen is where there's an instrument that consists of many individual components. Sometimes it's a survey instrument. Sometimes it's a composite measure of three or four different clinical measures. And there the question is whether things aggregate up to something that you believe is measuring what they claim it's measuring. And I think a lot of the issues about whether we should allow face validity without a lot of empirics have been around those measures, where we've got individual data elements that are being aggregated up or an individual survey that's being aggregated up. On an initial reading, face validity might be sufficient to let us move forward with the measure on that. I would argue that cognitive interviewing, a low data, low volume N kind of measure, is important for any kind of instrument-based data. If you can make the argument that it went through a cognitive interviewing process, and yes, people ask the respondents, what did you think you were answering here, and what your answer meant, what did your answer mean, then I think we've got validity at the individual element item and potentially at the score level as well. So I think we need to be clear about what we mean by score level validity in the different contexts. Risk-adjusted measures have one kind of score level validity issue. Instrument-based measures have a different kind of score level validity issue.
And this is Karen. Ron has his hand raised. So Ron, do you want to either respond to that or have another issue or point you want to make?
No, I've been sitting here dreaming, and we might have just heard the answer, but I've been the one who has been, and we aren't even to reliability yet, but on validity alone, I'm still not understanding, and I'm trying to think of a specific example, although we might just have heard an element of that, is how data element validity and requiring that should not be a regular part, because score level validity guarantees data element reliability. I'm still having a hard time expecting that, and I'm having a hard time not coming to the conclusion that it's expected but can be weighed without any justification provided. So then my mind went to the face validity discussion that occurred for the data elements. And it's interesting, I think, anyone can say if I'm way out there or wrong, but we kind of take face validity as an argument for the data element validity, in the sense of a whole bunch of experts said that that data element does relate to the concept we're trying to measure. And we say, yes, okay, these are experts, that's fine. And so that alone may be what justifies the expected but waived if adequate justification is provided. It can be that simple. But I'm not one in favor of leaving it optional. I just haven't thought of the perfect counter-argument where we have an absolutely high level of score-level validity testing performed, and yet the data elements are crap because nothing has been done. There's got to be one out there. I just haven't thought of it yet, and I think it might have been alluded to in the previous discussion, but nonetheless.
can I offer an example? Let me attest. Let me see if I understand. So my understanding in claims data, oftentimes the diagnostic coding is inaccurate, but if you pull together enough sort of diagnostic information, the score itself may behave or move in such a way as to kind of get at the underlying construct. So I do wonder if claims data and diagnostic information is an example. It's a test question, I'm not asserting that. Because the errors are distributed randomly among providers, and, you know, when you pull enough of it together, there's sort of a latent concept that's correct. Is that a possible?
I have previously made many references to not only the documentation that's in the chart, but also the claims, the coding of that information that ends up in claims data. And it's those kinds of things that I am concerned about when we talk about both reliability, but also definitely validity. So
anyway. Validity, yeah. I guess, I'm thinking mine's not really a validity statement. It really is not valid if it's not valid. Yeah. Okay.
That's Eric. I mean, I think that the validity, particularly claims, that, like, that's the data source that I'm most familiar with because I spent so many years dealing with it. I mean, this last cycle, I think the standardized transfusion ratio, which came from the dialysis domain, was one of the topics. I have conflicts of interest, so I couldn't, you know, involve myself in the conversation about it. But, you know, you look at the analysis on the ecological level and transfusions associated with poor outcomes. And so you say, oh, yeah, this metric has great case validity. The reason that association exists is because transfusions occur in hospitals, not in outpatient settings, at least in the dialysis patient population. And so there's obvious case validity. But then you actually look at the details of what the claims data reveal, and you realize that there's, I won't go into all the details of it, but there's lots of problems with the quality of the documentation of the data. And so, like, I struggle with this in part because if you don't have an in-depth knowledge of the data set itself, you can be easily misled into thinking that there is case validity on the basis of some of these associations that are recorded in the measurement information form. But in fact, underneath it, at the element level or at the documentation level, there's significant problems with the data. And I think this is, maybe it's unique to claims, maybe it's not, but it crosses all sorts of domains. And readmissions are a great example of that, right? I mean, on some level, yeah, readmissions are obviously, 30-day readmissions are very clearly documented in a Medicare claim. You can count how many days it went from discharge to readmission. But if you know all the details of Medicare policy, you recognize that, well, providers may or may not have changed the nature of the claim. And so if there's observation stays that are being documented as outpatient claims, then 30-day readmissions rates go down, but the actual intervention or delivery of acute care hasn't changed. And so all of these details, they bother me a lot. I know I'm new to this committee, so I'm not sure if this is totally pertinent, but I struggle with the fact that case validity seems so unpersuasive to me sometimes.
I agree, and we'll get to reliability in a little bit, but everything you said was true.
So, going back to the issue of, this is Dijon, going back to the issue of readmission, so even I'm really confused. So, for readmission measures, Karen and others, can you sort of help me understand readmission is a very hard measure, right? You know, whether you have readmission or not within 30 days. Now, in that context, what would be data element level validity and score level validity? I mean, what exactly would you be looking at?
This is Karen. I think what I'm hearing you ask, and tell me if I misunderstood, if people were doing data element testing for a readmission measure, is that what you're asking? They would show that the readmission
that's on the claim actually matches, you know, the hospital records, the, you know, the medical records. They would hopefully be also looking at the data elements that are used in the risk adjustment model. So basically the idea is the critical data elements should be, that are used in the measure, should be matching to the gold standard, which is typically the medical record. So that would be what they would be showing.
And I'm still making a case, this is Ron's job, I'm making a case that it should be expected, but it can be waived if adequate justification is provided. I'm not quite going to require it. I could be required, but we'll get a lot of pushback. But for exactly the question that was just asked, it would require not more than the sentence that Karen made as far as adequate justification.
Ron, this is Dave Nierens. I'm wondering if I can just give another example, essentially in support of where you end up. There may be data elements that are just so obviously valid that no serious human would ever question them. Now, whether death is one of those, I don't know, but we could probably find examples where at the data element level, there's just no serious doubt that it means what it says it means. And I guess, as I put my reviewer hat on, if somebody brought in and said, okay, here's the three key data elements, and we claim that we don't need to actually do formal testing because there's no serious doubt that they mean what they say they mean, and nobody's ever questioned it, and they've been used for these kind of purposes for 50 years. Would that be a sort of example of the direction you're trying to go?
Yeah, I think when we get to reliability, we may talk about that a little more too, but for validity, I'm reasonably okay that the Social Security Death Index, it measures exactly what it's supposed to do. Now, if you start to say, does it measure it within 10 days? Does it measure it? How real time is it? And so on. And are there occasional mistakes? Of course, all of that's true, but it is the accepted standard for the definition of being dead, I guess.
Hi, this is Larry Glantz. I'm going to weigh in a little bit, and I just want to start off with the question, which I think is, should score-level validity testing be required, expected, or optional? And I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say that it should be required, and I think that there are several components to this. The first one being face validity. I think face validity is necessary but not sufficient. I think that there ought to be some measure, some consensus that the clinical experts, the clinical content experts agree that the measure is valid. So, for example, when you consider readmissions, does that capture quality or does it capture access to care? So you need to first get that consensus that the outcome that you've chosen to measure is a valid reflection of quality. And then moving on, I think that Jack gave us a nice structure to think about validity. I think there are several components to validity other than face validity. I think that there's construct validity, which is where you compare an existing measure to other credible measures. I think that's a little bit weak oftentimes because it's not always clear that the credible measures really measure what you think they're measuring. I think that the key to looking at score-level validity testing, once you've established face validity, is, at least in the case of risk-adjusted outcome measures, to look at predictive validity, to look at the risk adjustment model itself. Because if the risk adjustment model does what it's supposed to do, then you, in a really perfect world, you could, with a high level of certainty, predict what the outcomes for an individual provider, be it a hospital or a physician, would be conditional on their patient cohort that they're treating and conditional on the risk factors for those patients. So then if you can predict the individual outcomes for those patients and you can compare them to the expected outcomes of that physician or that hospital in aggregate, then you've got a pretty good way of looking at the performance or the quality of that provider. So I think that predictive validity, at least for risk-adjusted outcome measures, clinical measures, is really at the very heart of score-level validity testing. And I don't think it's reasonable for NQF to endorse measures that do not have score-level validity. I don't think it's enough to have face validity because, honestly, that's just too low of a bar. CMS is using these measures as a basis for redesigning the entire healthcare system, and it likes to use NQF-endorsed measures, and I don't think CMS should be using measures that are endorsed purely based on face validity alone. So I would suggest that, one, yes, score-level validity testing should absolutely be required. Two, that the basic components of that validity testing should be, one, face validity, two, predictive validity, and also we should as well look at missing data and exclusion and other things that affect validity. But at the end of the day, yes, it should be required.
I'm sorry, Larry, this is Ron. My comments were about data element validity. I agree with you completely about score-level validity.
This is Sherry. I'm going to agree with Larry on most of what he said, but come back to the issue of face validity at an early stage of development of these measures, when they probably shouldn't be used for the kinds of things you were raising, Larry, and I totally agree about that. But face validity assesses content validity at some basic level and probably is necessary, but as you said, insufficient. But, and this is coming back to Jack, I was meaning discriminant validity, Jack, not reliability at the unit comparison level. If measures don't discriminate between the units that are being compared accurately, that's a validity issue, then they really shouldn't be used for that purpose. So
fair enough, Sherry. Thanks for the clarification.
So discriminant validity, Larry, I think predictive validity is a little dodgy because you have to be out there long enough to have a longitudinal assessment empirically of that kind of, or depend on the literature for it. But I would think discriminant validity is what we're looking for in these comparisons at some basic level, in addition to other aspects of validity. But in terms of construct validity, I think if the measures don't discriminate, then they shouldn't be used for that purpose. So I would say that while I agree that I still am fuzzy about data element validity, but score-level reliability, I'm going to come down on, it should be expected but waived if, for example, we're in the early phases of development of this measure and there should be a qualification until you get to the empirical assessment of score-level validity. It shouldn't be used for specific kinds of purposes. And I'm probably going to have to ditch until...
Dave, Karen, I'm wondering if I could suggest a possible compromise sound between Larry and Sherry here. If we went around to things required, but then in some defined early phase, which may be the initial submission process, face validity subject to certain stipulations may be an acceptable way to establish score-level validity. It is required. That's a something. But that we move as quickly as possible past it. I find myself very sympathetic with Larry in saying, look, all these measures are going to be endorsed and then used out there to switch millions and millions of dollars around. The bar should be pretty high. I'm also sympathetic to Sherry's point. We've heard from developers that the point's early on in the process where till the chicken and egg, that if you don't out there to be used, sometimes the information get on the score level. Some narrow compromise.
Let me just come back a little bit. I think sometimes Sherry and I differ because we use terms somewhat differently. So when I talk about predictive validity, I'm saying that you have a risk adjustment model which allows you to predict the individual outcomes conditional on their risk factors. So that does not require longitudinal data per se. It requires a database that was used to develop and validate the model. And I don't think measure developers should be coming to NQF with risk-adjusted outcome measures that where they haven't done anything to validate the model. So I think that that should be an absolute requirement for risk-adjusted outcome measures. I don't think these things should be released out in the wild and be used for reimbursements and pay for performance and accountable care and all that stuff without having been validated, without having been shown to have A, face validity, and B, predictive validity.
Steve, that's a great point, Larry, because I would call that discriminant validity because it discriminates between people who are sicker and less sick. So, you know, we are probably talking same and similar language, but in different kind of situations for what constitutes, you know, the groups we're studying.
Thanks.
Karen, this is Sherry. I have to sign off, but thanks for a very lively discussion as usual. Bye, y'all.
Thank you, Sherry.
And happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Karen,
so
again, I just noticed, and obviously because of the effort and staying, I missed a book, and it may not be the discussion that people have on that.
Hey, Dave. You're kind of your audio is a little weak. I don't know if it's because people aren't on mute, or maybe you're running low on battery, or something. Yes, I don't know if to others, but it's coming across to me as a little kind of fuzzy.
Same for me. Been here too.
Yeah, Dave, you were kind of coming in and out, so I don't know if you maybe were walking around or something. You want to try again?
I think he's switching phones, he said.
Okay. It looks like maybe Paul, do you have your hand raised? If you want to jump into this while we're waiting on Dave to hop back in?
I just want to support what Sherry was saying in that when you first introduce a metric, it may be very difficult to establish validity. There may be tremendous face validity to it. I'm thinking something as simple as, you know, mortality. I don't think you need to go far to establish the validity of mortality as a measure for quality in cardiac surgery. However, you know, if you were presenting NQF with a new mortality measure, then you would not have validated it other than through face validity. So, and even with a recent mission, I think the SDS got into a sort of a bind this year because they had a composite measure which was, it was predictive, so it did fulfill that capacity, but validity of it was, I mean, the initial submission was based on face validity, and then once you resubmit it, there's nothing else out there that corroborates it or correlates with it because it was a unique and innovative metric, and so you're kind of, you can't use face validity for a resubmission, so it becomes like a catch-22. So I think that there is still a role for face validity in terms of, particularly when you are presenting something that is new and that has serious face validity.
Paul, can I just respond to that a second? I think that there may be a little bit of confusion. So I think that when STS develops measures, risk-adjusted outcome measures, and they put them out there in the peer-reviewed literature, they don't just talk about face validity. They also talk about predictive validity. They validate the risk adjustment model. And what I'm saying is that at the heart of score-level validity is how good is the risk adjustment model. And so what I'm saying is that when measure developers like STS submit new measures to NQF, they should include information on A, face validity, B, predictive validity, C, how they handled missing data. I actually think that the construct validity is a relatively weak type of empiric validity testing, and I would think that that should be optional. But the other pieces that I just mentioned, I think, are very important. And I don't think measure developers, again, should submit measures to NQF for endorsement without some type of information on predictive validity, how well the risk adjustment model works, in other words.
So Larry, this is Karen. Just a couple things that I want to make sure that we're all on the same page on. We do ask for, you know, determination and calibration of risk adjustment models for those outcome measures that are risk adjusted. So I completely agree with you. Should be good. But I think we're talking about more along the lines of the construct validation potentially or something like that. And I do want to remind everybody that, you know, even if we're looking and being very careful, which I think we try to be on the risk adjustment for the outcome measures, we do get a lot of measures in that are structure or process measures. So maybe the discussion needs to, you know, think about a process measure and think about construct validation or something along those lines for process measures. You see what I'm saying, Larry? We have to think about the process measures and structure measures as well.
In other words,
but they won't have this.
But Karen, I thought that the primary goal of our methods panel was to look at complex measures, primarily risk-adjusted measures, not really at process measures. And I also thought that NQF is trying to get away from process measures. But again, I thought that our committee is primarily weighing in on complex measures, not process measures. Am I wrong?
The methods panel is helping us to evaluate those complex measures. So absolutely, the ones that you guys get are those outcome measures or instrument-based measures, composite measures. But you're also acting as an advisory group to NQF for the criteria overall. So I'm actually asking you not to think just about the measures that will be coming under your purview as you do the evaluations, but to think about all of, you know, all the measures that come into us and help us think through the criteria for everything.
So what I would say then is I think that construct validity is a valid way of evaluating the validity of process measures, but I think risk-adjusted outcome measures, I think predictive validity is much, much more powerful than construct validity.
So what would you say if you're thinking about, let's just, what would be your opinion on required versus expected versus optional for a process measure if they're doing construct validity? Would you still like to see that required? Would you be okay if it wasn't, if they did just data elements? Or how would you feel there?
So I think for a process measure that you should require construct validity. It's not enough to have face validity. I think that for a risk-adjusted outcome measure, I would not require construct validity because it's never clear to me that the new measure needs to necessarily correlate with existing measures because those existing measures may not be as good as the new measure. So I don't think construct validity is a very powerful way to establish the validity of the measure unless you have to do it that way, which you would for a process measure.
Dave and Andrew, I'm wondering if we could slide a little bit back to what I think is a more basic question. It seems to me that we may be overshooting the mark just a little bit by distinguishing the different types of validity. The question in front of us isn't exactly which type of validity, it's whether validity testing at all should be required. I'm inclined to think that we could spend a long, long time weaving around through the various types of validity, when in fact, when measure developers come to us, they occasionally bring different sorts of validity information to us that may be tailored to the circumstances and the type of measure they're bringing. I just don't know if we're going to get to solid ground here with focus on specific types of validity where I think we may be actually close to some agreement on the simpler, more basic question of yes, no, should score level validity testing be required? I'm hearing a lot of yes on that.
Yes, this is Jack Needleman, and I'm also hearing a lot of yes on that. But one other thing I've been struck by in the conversation is what we mean by validity. And at one level, and this is where content validity is particularly relevant, it's the question of is the measure measuring what it claims to be measuring? And then the second element, and often this comes up in the reapplication, is it measuring quality? Is it a valid measure of quality? And I think in dealing with that second question, we've seen a lot of efforts to correlate measures with other measures that are accepted as measuring quality. And if it's correlated, then it must be measuring some elements of quality. And I think the element of the conversation that we haven't had is whether that broader question of not is the measure measuring what it says it's measuring, but is the measure measuring quality, is within our purview. Or whether that's the substantive committee's judgment related to importance and usability.
Yeah, Jack Baker, again, I strongly support what you just said. I've been feeling all along and almost put it in one of the email chains earlier that it seems like in our hands, the key validity question is the second one. Does this measure quality?
So a couple of things. This is Karen. Just a couple of things that come to that. I think we need to talk about the quality thing a little separately, and that was what we had teed up for the next conversation. So I think we definitely want to get there. I guess a question for you guys, though, is the question about does it measure quality? Statistical testing, I mean, isn't that more of a conceptual question? No matter what kind of testing you do, that's not really going to answer that question, is it? And that's a question I'm posing to you guys. So is that more of a conceptual question and not necessarily going to be answered by the results of some correlation or what have you?
One of the things I've been struck with on the resubmissions has been the effort to find some correlation with some other measure. And that becomes a validation of the measure. That clearly is a validation that it's measuring quality, not that it's measuring what it says it's going to measure. And we've seen some weird stuff there on the last go-round. There were correlations with R-squares in the 0.05 level, statistically significant because of big samples, and we have the developers telling us, well, it's statistically significant. It doesn't have to be a large correlation as long as it's statistically significant. And that just struck me as fundamentally wrong. But my intent here was find a measure that you think is measuring similar things that are considered measuring quality and find a correlation that's high enough to convince you that they're measuring comparable things, if not the same things, with enough difference that this measure is useful separate from those other measures.
And Jack, going to that question, sometimes it's really hard for developers to find something to correlate with, and hence I think sometimes we get these really weak demonstrations, if you will. And again, that's going to be one of the things that we want to talk about a little bit later in the call or our next call once. But I think that is what makes me hesitate with the making testing, score level testing, validity testing required. I think what we'll end up getting, and this is just my opinion, you guys can take it as you will. I think what we'll end up getting if we require it is these really weak tests that maybe, check a box but don't really tell us much. And maybe that's okay. But I did want to throw that out there.
This is Alex.
Go ahead.
This is Alex. For an outcome measure, first I just want to emphasize something that came up in the email, saying that the way I think about these issues for outcome measures differs from process measures. So I think it might be a mistake in the rubric to lump those two, because to me it perturbs my ability to think well about the different situations. So talking about outcome measures, what I want to know is that the outcome is being measured properly, called that element level validity. Sometimes that's obvious, sometimes that's not obvious. Sometimes it looks obvious, but when, I think it was Eric said, when you poke on the data, you find out you've been misled. So I think that's foundational. As Larry and others have said, the quality of the accuracy of the risk model is essential. And an idea that Dave raised, a method that he suggested on the email chain yesterday, was another thing that would be persuasive to me, is if you had risk-adjusted outcomes and then you checked if process quality explains some of the outcome variance. So in other words, things that are happening during the course of care are actually related to the outcomes that are observed, the adjusted outcomes. That would be interesting and persuasive. What I don't find persuasive is, as has been recently mentioned, are the correlations of outcome measures with other related outcome measures. That's just not helpful. But the things I mentioned previously, I think, are all important ingredients to me having confidence in an outcome measure.
Okay, other thoughts?
This is Sean, and since no one else is talking, I guess I'll try to make a few points. One is just when Larry was advocating for requirement of predictive validity, I felt like I didn't know what he meant by that, and it turned out that Sherry and Larry were using the same words and meaning something different. And that's just an example of why I feel the language of reliability and validity is really not very helpful for me. So I wish if we say, if we really mean risk adjustment, just say risk adjustment. That's a very concrete, critical issue that recurs all the time that we ought to always be looking about, thinking about. I think the evaluation criteria call attention to that issue, but I just, for me, I don't find the language that helpful. So that's why, if I was going to vote on should score level validity testing be required, I'm going to say no, less than optional, even though I heard that testing can be interpreted broadly to refer to prior literature. I just think it's such a broad, undefined concept to say what is score level validity. But I'm not in a position to say, yes, I really think that needs to be tested, because I fundamentally don't know what we're talking about, and I don't know what it is. And I do think it's probably worth distinguishing cases where a measure, at least on the surface, is the thing that it's literally measuring is something that on the surface is inherently interesting and meaningful in itself, compared to cases where there's always an extrapolation from the thing that's literally being measured to some other proxy. And I think in the cases where you're expecting to make some leap from the literal interpretation to some other thing, the number of claims for condition XUC is going to be a proxy for a patient's symptom burden or something like that. In those cases, I think we had a always be looking for evidence, looking for validity issues and looking for evidence to help address them. But I just think that the really interesting and critical issues are the ones that take, turning on your brain and thinking about, and the critical thinking and analysis go a long way, and that just these rote statistical analyses that just, address some correlation usually just don't get at the heart of the most critical methodological issues for the measures. Well, I think, instead of saying should score level validity testing be required, I would say should score level validity be required, and I'd say absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that an informal process that uses, critical arguments and analysis and also gives a little flexibility for situations where no one in the world is questioning an issue does not necessarily benefit from having additional statistical analysis of that issue. I think it should be required, although reviewers should be convinced that the measure is free of important issues, but I just don't think it should be, yes, we expect score level validity to be done when we don't even already know what we mean by that.
Thank you, Sean. I think you're right. We still are a little bit off in terms of our terminology. So, Dave, do you think it's worthwhile to go ahead and do the voting and see where we are? And let me make sure that I make it very clear these votes are really just to help me understand where people are in their thinking. Not really binding in any particular way.
Yeah, I think I'd suggest we do that. I'm watching the time and realize we've got an equally rich discussion of reliability we haven't touched yet, plus these interesting optional things that we probably won't get to. So, and as you say, this is to get a sense of where we are right now. There may be some email follow-up we could do, and why don't we see where we are.
Okay, and Hannah, you're going to help us with voting. So she's bringing up the screen right now. And we're going to start out with the question about score level validity testing. So again, this is, in addition to any checking of risk adjustment adequacy and all that kind of stuff, this is that additional testing. And right now, when we talk about face validity, we are talking about score level, thinking about the score and whether or not the score can differentiate good from poor quality. So right now, face validity would be included as part of an option. So we're not trying to vote on whether we want to keep or delete case validity, okay? So go ahead and cast your vote. While you're doing that, I'll give a few minutes. Let me see how many I expect. I'm probably looking for, if I counted right, I'm looking for about 17 votes. And I can't tell, can you turn that into numbers just so we can see how many?
Right.
There it is.
Hey, Karen, this is Dijon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this also includes the situation of new measures, right?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
This question does include a situation where a measure developer is coming up with a new measure, correct?
Yeah, so right now we're not really just trying to differentiate between new versus maintenance.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is, makes it even more complicated, right?
Yeah.
Karen,
yes.
This is tough, but this is Dave Sella. Is there a vote on the screen? I'm looking at the questions to discuss slide. Is that supposed to be a vote on the screen?
email she just sent that takes you through.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you mentioned that earlier. Okay.
Instead of PDF.
And we know Dave is still working on it. I can't tell from the screen. Is there any way you can share this with the audience so they can see where we are? We are very fortunate to have Hannah helping us out today. I don't know how to run any of this stuff, so Hannah is doing this for us. She's trying to pull it up on the screen so that everybody can see where we are.
Your assessment of your ability was extremely reliable and valid.
Yes. Absolutely.
I'm getting a screen that says, easy as pie, just hang inside, you're ready to go. Nothing's there.
That doesn't sound very reliable.
That's correct. I'm logged in under PK and just
try refreshing the screen.
Yeah, that was there until she opened up the testing, so you might have been logged in a little too early or something.
So when we do vote, it just sits there on the screen until you clear it. So you
right.
Say you're done, and then we clear. Okay.
That's what I'm seeing. That's wrong. It's done, and I'm just waiting. But, yes, I voted.
Okay. That's okay, Hannah. Don't worry about it if you can't get it up on the screen. Can you tell how many people
are voting? Response recorded. Response recorded tells you you're good.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. And can you tell how many, Hannah, have voted? Do we have something close to 15. Okay, that's pretty close. Okay. So I'll read this out. We're not quite sure how to get that on your screen. So of the 15 votes that we captured, seven voted. This is for score level validity testing. Seven voted for required. Six voted for accepted but waived. And then two suggested voted for leave as optional. So I think we still are not at complete consensus, but we're probably not quite as leave as optional. So it looks like people are suggesting that we try to maybe strengthen our requirements a little bit. So we'll keep going as Dave suggested in terms of some emails back and forth, et cetera, to try to maybe get a little bit more clarity. But that's where we landed. So. Seven required, six accepted, two leave is optional.
Well, if we went with the Electoral College, it required would lose even though it got the popular vote.
They have spoken. It's going to be accepted but waived, right? Accepted but waived, but... let's go ahead and try the data element one because we had that discussion a little bit earlier today. And let's see where we are. So should data element validity testing be required, expected, but waived with adequate justification or leave as optional?
Just a quick question here. We're still talking about we're not talking about instrument or any of the other ones. We're talking about just that first column, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
They're both required for instrument.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important distinction. Thanks for bringing that up. That was Gene, right?
Yes, it was.
Yep, thank you. And are we close to our 15 people yet, Hannah? Can you tell? Okay. You can just leave it as count if you want. This is Okay, 14 people. Okay, we've got our 15 people again. So for data elements, we have data element validity testing. We have 3 think it should be required, 11 think it should be expected but potentially waived, and 1 would like to leave it as optional. Okay, so much more consensus on the data element validation. Okay, thank you guys for that. Let's go now to the discussion about reliability. And let's see, I just advanced the slide, but we're waiting on Hannah to swap us into a regular slide deck. This is what shows on the screen. What's showing on the screen?
The questions to discuss. So
okay. Yeah. Okay, good. So questions to discuss. Revisiting the recommendation regarding score level reliability testing. So this is harkening back to our October discussion. I think we did come to consensus in that meeting that we would like to require score level reliability testing. So if that is still the case, if people still feel that that's the case, would you be willing to wait until maintenance for that? So in other words, not necessarily required for the brand new waivers, brand new measures, but wait until maintenance, or would you be willing to grant a waiver?
Can you advance one slide, I think? Well, that was 2. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess, first of all, does anybody, is there kind of a, any kind of groundswelling of resistance against requiring score level reliability testing? If not, then let's just talk just briefly about, you know, are we willing to wait until maintenance, and are we willing to grant a waiver?
Hey, Karen.
Uh-huh.
Larry, it seemed like it was interesting to me that we got consensus so quickly on data validity testing. Would it be okay if I just address that just for a second?
Sure.
So many, many of the measures that NQF evaluates for CMS are measures that are based on administrative data. And I think that before we require data element validation, which essentially requires measure developers to go back to the medical record and re-abstract the medical record as the authoritative medical, as the authoritative source, and look at the agreement between the administrative data, the ICD codes, ICD-10 codes that have been coded, and the medical record. That is a very, very resource-intensive process, and it seems that we really haven't discussed that at all. We have never required, as far as I can see, the measures that I've reviewed, the measures developers typically do not address data element validation, and primarily I think it's because of a resource issue, because of a feasibility issue. So I think we ought to have a little bit of a discussion around this. I'm not saying that we shouldn't want to have valid data. I think valid data is a good thing. I'm questioning the feasibility of it for many of our administrative, for many of our measures that are based on administrative data.
Yeah, this is Jack Needleman. There, the CMS measures that have come in have all had pretty standard stock language in it, I can't quite pull up a specific one right now, but they basically say, we have not looked at the individual coding of this data element for purposes of validating this data element in this measure. However, CMS has this process for validating the coding of its claims, which is the measures source of the administrative data, validating its claims through by going back and looking at the coding of the in the original patient record and how it's been claimed and billed to us. And we're relying upon that as the check on the data. And for the most part, that language has been acceptable. It goes back, I think, to the argument, the discussion earlier about whether if there is a literature or something else that one can point to or process independent of the measure that should lead to confidence in the data used in the measure, it would be acceptable. And that's what people have been doing with the CMS measures. And by and large, I think we've been accepting that.
But that's exactly wrong, because that validation is, that auditing is done for financial validity. It is not diagnostic coding validity. That's a secondary issue in those audits, having been a participant. And so that justification is like fingers on the chalkboard to me, because that actually does not at all get at the issue Larry raised. I think to truly validate claims measures for diagnostic information is incredibly labor-intensive and costly. And I've only seen one measure developer do that correctly. And they happen to be in a medical school with great access to EHR data. So that one drives me crazy, because the audits have a very specific financial goal. And the measures are not often financial.
So this is Ron, and that's why I feel slightly differently about reliability than I did about validity, but I end up at the same place for all the discussion, and I realize that I'm not sure how reliable the data elements are either, but the justification we'll get, I expect it, but Wade is adequate justification provided as opposed to the other three options, and I'm sure the statement that we'll get most of the time is the same statement that was said earlier, that we probably will become almost boilerplate as time goes on. And it'll be up to the committee again as they review each measure as to whether to accept that justification or not. But even more so than for validity, the amount of effort that would it take to assess the reliability would just almost totally shut off measure development for a while. If we made it required, and yet I can't go to lead as optional. I just can't get to optional. So anyway, that's my opinion.
It's a really difficult issue, because it really goes to the heart of the measure development process. And I think the validity issue also, you ought to think about it differently for when you're talking about the outcome versus the diagnostic codes that are used for risk adjustment. So, for example, if your outcome is a hospital-acquired infection, I would think that one would really want to carefully look at whether or not the ICD codes validly or accurately capture clinical infections. And so there, I think that measure developers should make some effort to go back to the medical record as the authoritative source and re-abstract those medical records and see, look at the level of agreement between the ICD codes that are being used to code infections versus the what you're getting when you actually look at the medical record itself. I don't feel as strongly about looking at the data validity of diagnostic codes that are being used for risk adjustment. I think those are still important, but I, again, for the reasons that we've discussed, I don't think it's feasible to look at all the diagnostic codes. But I think in the case of the outcome itself, I think we should consider whether or not we should ask developers to validate the outcome data element if it's being taken, say, from administrative data.
Yeah, I mean, I thank this, Dave Stella. I guess I thought of administrative data as I was one of the middle voters that as an explanation that would be satisfactory for not providing reliability data.
Yeah.
So, I think, and maybe it could even be stated explicitly that this does not include medical chart abstraction to test the accuracy of the administrative data.
So this is Karen. In the past, we have, and I agree with you, I think that would probably be, you know, the votes on data element validity did come out as expected, not required. So the waiver might be exactly what Larry is getting to with the claims data and the burden, and Ron as well. We have, so just a couple things. In the past, every now and again, we do get people who have gone to the literature, and there have been studies where people have looked at specific, you know, ICD, well, there's 9 in the past, you know, codes to see if they're really reflecting in the claims what's in the medical records. So people, on occasion, those happen, and maybe for some of those outcome data elements that Larry's kind of referring to, we might have more luck finding those actually in the published literature. So, you know, it could be out there, and people should probably be encouraged to look. I think to Jen's point about the auditing, what I will say is I know that we do have developers who talk about that, and they say, you know, it's audited, and therefore, you know, they're valid. That statement on itself, even now with our requirements, wouldn't stand on its own because we would have to show, you know, we would actually need to see the results of that, not just a kind of a blanket statement. So, I think the fingers on the top board, I get the frustration with that, and, you know, they would have to actually show real data. So usually what they do is they say that, but then they also show score level validation or something along those lines as well. So they still, you know, can do both. But if that's all they said by itself, that would not meet our requirements. So I think, Larry, what we could do is with the data element validity vote and where we are, we could have either some additional discussion about what might be a reasonable justification, you know, if we wanted to lay it out, or we could just let people, you know, say what they will and we could talk about it later. So I think maybe we could do that maybe in an email exchange or something along those lines. So if it's okay with you, let's go back a little bit and talk about the score level reliability testing and just whether or not people are willing to wait until maintenance or willing to grant a waiver with adequate justification. So I think this is really thinking about, and now that I read the question, I realize that there's probably a hole in my logic there, but if it's a new measure coming in the door, you know, would you have to have score level testing for that new measure, or are you willing to wait until maintenance? Or maybe the other way is to say you'd be willing to grant a waiver, and maybe in your mind you might be more willing to grant a waiver for a new measure and less willing for a maintenance measure. So that's kind of what I was getting at. And I don't know if people have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, and just real quickly, what would be the rationale for waiting until maintenance if this is an important concept?
I think the only rationale might be that score level reliability maybe could take, you have to have enough providers and enough patients, I think, to get a reasonable estimate of reliability perhaps, and that's a question for you guys. Sometimes people develop measures and they're starting with a pretty small number of medical records and patients and that sort of thing. So they would do typically a data element kind of IRR analysis with their 300 records or whatever they've got. And that might not cut it for a score level analysis.
Karen,
Yeah, hey.
This is Dave. So I'm just doing a sort of a time check here. It looks like we only have about 8 minutes until we're supposed to do a public comment and then wrap up. So we want to make sure if there's anything you want to be sure to get voted on or done, you got about 8 minutes.
Thanks, Dave. And why don't we just plan on not getting to the data element reliability testing. We'll not worry about that today. And let's just think about the score level reliability testing and, the justification that I just threw out. That may hold water and it may not. So if you guys want to talk about that. So
Karen, this is Jack Niedelman. Just real quickly, I'd be willing to wait on some measures but not others. The CMS, the administrative data measures, they've got the data to do score level testing, even if they're proposing the measure the first time. While we had an example in one of the last rounds, but I forget which one, where people had done a lot of development on the measure, they wanted to get it endorsed, but they did not have the large-scale data yet to demonstrate the score level reliability in differentiating across units because it hadn't been adopted yet. So those are different circumstances, and I think the decision about whether to wait on score level reliability measures should depend upon whether the data is in fact in hand in large enough quantities to do the testing. I'm with Sherry. I don't want to discourage new measures where on the basis of data demands that are unrealistic, but that certainly doesn't apply to some of the folks who are proposing measures.
Yeah, so this is Ron. Why wouldn't that be just the grounds for a waiver? And we still require score level reliability testing. The rule is you don't wait for maintenance. You expect it at the start. But you are willing to grant a waiver with adequate justification. You just gave a perfectly good one. I'm trying to put the logic together in my mind of, especially if this happened to be a pay for performance, depends a lot on the usage, or a comparative type measure, that we're going out there and saying to people, yeah, this measure is important to use, but we don't know it's a reliable measure. That just doesn't sit well with me. But perhaps that's more in the adoption and application of the measure than the measure itself. But I still think we can accomplish the same thing to say that we do want score level reliability testing, but we're willing to grant a waiver with adequate justification. When it comes around again, we'll see what work is done.
So this is Larry Glantz. I'm going to be a little bit black and white. I think that we should require score level reliability. I don't think we should be granting waivers. I think that when NQF endorses a measure, it can then be used for public reporting. If a measure is not reliable, I don't think it should be used for public reporting.
Well, it does have a certain logic to it.
Agree. Karen, do you want to get a quick vote before we run out of time, just to get a sense of the room?
Let's get a sense of the room. Let's get a sense of how I wrote that our voting question, which I think is exactly like that. So it might not, there you might be having a hard time.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer it. From what's on the screen, I don't know how to answer it.
Yeah, how do you answer if your answer is no?
Yeah.
Tama can create one.
I think so. Because you either have to be willing to wait until maintenance or you have to be willing to grant a waiver, and there's a third option that's missing there.
Yeah. So Hannah,
no.
Hannah added a no. That means, and to
well, let's go.
Yeah, that was fast too. She learned how to do that. The no means that we want it, and we're not willing to wait, and we're not willing to grant a waiver. We got to have.
Basically, the no. In other words, if you agree with Larry's position,
if you agree with Larry.
But Larry, you can vote.
And we're probably still looking for about 15 people. And Hannah, if you could. Hannah likes these percentages, I tell you.
By the way, I did not take any money from large corporate sponsors.
Okay, we've got
it. But I will accept grassroots.
But, you know, you're getting free health care, which is kind of an emolument.
Yeah, well, you read all the evidence.
I'm confused what a no response is. This is John.
No, you don't like either of those. You want to require the reliability score check.
Basically, your position would be if you say no, it's that reliability is required without exception. It has to be reliable to be a resident.
Thanks.
And it looks like we have a person who was able to vote this time that wasn't. So we're at 16 votes. And 0% are willing to
vote.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what happened there. So nobody is willing to wait to maintenance. Five people are willing to grant a waiver. And 12 people. Oh, we're at 17. Okay. So I hope is that working right here? Let's make sure. I had counted 17, but we only had 15 vote on the other one. So again, we're not going to like change the world with this vote. This is just giving us a flavor. But looks like 12 people went with Larry, and they want it, and they want it now.
Okay.
So no waiver. Okay, so we think that's pretty reasonable. So it looks like a 2-to-1 margin of requiring it versus expecting it versus granting a waiver, potentially.
Okay, so now that Larry has a posse, we're at the 10 minutes to the hour. Did you want to try to squeeze something else in or go to public comment?
I think we should go to public comment because I know us, and we're not going to get anything settled in 5 minutes for the next one, I don't think. Do you think we would get anything settled and be able to vote on the next one, the data element reliability? Okay.
I don't know.
Oh, wow. And this 2 hours has gone by so fast for me. I don't know about you guys.
We can follow an email. You know, maybe get a sense on email.
Yeah, we'll try to do that. We'll definitely try to do that. Okay, why don't we, before we hand it over for public comment, does anybody else from the panel have anything kind of burning issues or things you want to either reiterate or have us think about via email or on our next call? Okay, hearing none. Let's go ahead and open it up for public comment. Do we have anybody from the public who would like to weigh in, either with comments in general or comments on where the stall votes landed? And you could, if anybody has a public comment, you could do it via phone or via a chat function. Hearing none, I think we will go ahead and wrap up our call for today. So what are our next steps? Well, our methods webinars, we have a poll that is forthcoming.
And forthcoming, Hannah is ready to send that out right after this call, I think, right, Hannah?
Sure.
Great. So in this doodle poll, it's quite scary to look at because there's a lot of dates on there. And what we're trying to do is get people's availability for the full year of this year. And we had, and John actually had asked us about this, and it's a valid point. We had said that we wanted to go to bi-monthly webinars with you guys rather than monthly, and they would just be longer, 2 hours instead of one. What we have realized is that we don't want to have webinars with you in the months that you are either coming to us for in-person meetings or you're doing the evaluations of the measures. So what we're going to do is we're going to backtrack just a little bit, and rather than ask you to do bi-monthly webinars, we're going to ask you to do webinars in the month of January. And then I think, and the doodle poll would tell you for sure, I think maybe May, June, and July. And then we'll do one in August, and then another one in December or something like that. So we still have six, but it's not going to be like every other month. It'll be kind of in the months that you're not doing a lot of other work with us and for us. So you'll see that in the doodle. And also in the doodle is a couple of sections, and I think it's for late March, early April.
Sure.
And then also in the month of October.
Right.
And those, the doodle is asking for the full day, so we're trying to come up with our days for our in-person. And it'll be like we had this past October. It would be a two-day in-person meeting. So we look forward to hearing your feedback on those. We still have our message panel mailbox. You can get a hold of us. We will be following up on some of these things via email. And then in January, probably toward the end of January, I think is the dates that we are putting forward, we'll revisit for another webinar. We will try to finish up our data element reliability discussion, maybe clean up anything else we need to that we haven't done through email on these issues. And then we'll get to that question about is it really a quality measure, et cetera, and then talk about comparators in score level construct validation specifically, but maybe even outside construct validation. So lots of interesting things to come up with. And just so you know what's going on at NQF in terms of our cycles and evaluation cycles, January 6th is our deadline for measures coming in for our next evaluation cycle, so it's just right around the corner. And we as staff will take probably about, I think our timeline is about 4 weeks to process those measures and get them in shape to send to you, which means that we'll be sending you measures for your evaluation probably early February-ish timeframe. So that's what we're planning on. So with that, anybody have any questions or any final comments?
Karen, I don't know how many, it's Ron, I don't know how many people in this group are planning on attending the annual conference.
Oh,
but
yes.
If you could ask that in this infamous poll you're sending out, it's a captive audience. We'd have to find the right time because those days are pretty full and everything. But it's a March meeting, and depending on who's there, could be done.
We could do that, Ron. That's a really great idea. And we should have flashed up, and I didn't even think about it. We should have flashed up our annual conference numbers, the dates. They are set, and I've forgotten when they are. But Hannah can do
the
that.
23rd to the 25th. I can have it right here at my left-hand side.
Oh, okay. 23rd, 25th.
I'm just thinking of an opportunity. I don't even know if six of our members go to that or 10 of them do or whatever. But
yeah.
Anyway, we can find out pretty quickly.
Yeah, we could. If we did that the 23rd to the 25th is a Monday through Wednesday. So if we did try to hang it on, you know, right beside it, we'd probably do the Thursday and Friday. But anyway, we can go from there and see. Yeah, thanks for that, Ron. Good idea.
Okay, no problem.
Anybody else have any last minute comments? Dave and Dave, thank you so much for facilitating today's call. I know it was a little haphazard on my part. I appreciate you taking over and making it a good conversation. And thanks to all of you for joining for this full 2 hours.
We should be thanking you, Karen. You did a fine job facilitating. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think we made good progress. Good use of the time.
Thank you all. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.